Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To be a great power today, a country must have deterrence. This is what the EU and NATO want to deny Russia. This explains why their proxy Ukraine has become heavily reliant on drone warfare as it's losing on the battlefield. This in turn brings about escalation, and this is becoming dangerous for all involved. Crosstalking the Ukraine proxy war, I'm joined by my guest, Michael Maloof in Reston. He is a former Pentagon senior security policy analyst. In Pittsburgh, we have Dan Kovalik. He is a professor of law and author of The Case for Palestine, Why It Matters and Why You Should Care. And in Austin, we cross to Ryan Milton. He is a political analyst, consultant, and activist. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Michael, let me go to you first in Reston. As you all, we all know that the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum is going on as we speak. On its opening day, there was a missile drone strike on St. Petersburg, and that missile came from Baltic state airspace. This is a dangerous escalation because Russia has a right to respond. You know where I'm going with this. These are very dangerous times.
Well, I think you're right. And I think since international law, as we know it, traditionally has been tossed out the window due to the actions of Israel and the United States in their preemptive strikes against Iran, Everything is fair game now, and we're going to be seeing that. And you see that now with Iran attacking the locations from which the United States launches. So the new international precedences are there, and that's going to become the new norm. And so I would not be too surprised if, in fact, any launches from the Baltic countries could be traced back. And then the next thing they know, they got a Norezhnik coming up their stovepipe.
Yeah, you know, Dan, one of the important things that we've seen here through this conflict is that the so-called red lines. Russia's never defends its red lines, okay? They would never use this weapon. They keep bluffing their way through. And I would say that is probably the most dangerous proposition that you can hold because, as I said in my introduction, to be a great power, you must have deterrence. And a great power will go to any lengths to maintain that deterrence. And this is what the EU, NATO is pushing. They're trying, in other words, it's a very dangerous game of chicken. Dan.
Yes, well, Russia could have, had a legitimate claim to attack Western countries by now, given their, that this really is a Western war against Russia. They have not done it for the simple reason that they don't want this to escalate into, more of a conflict than it is. I was going to say into World War III, but I think we are in World War III.
I agree. We are.
In kind of a lower level, but they don't want it to escalate into something looking more like World War II. Russia, in fact, is the responsible actor here, right? But it looks like NATO is trying to provoke Russia into doing something that would lead to a greater conflagration, and that is the scary part here.
Ryan, the UK, this is public information, the UK is providing Ukraine with 120,000 drones and some long-range missiles. Well, given the logic of our times, and I regret the passage of international law. I regret the passage of these norms. They kept us away from World War III up until now. And I agree with Dan. We are in a form of World War III. But going to these 120,000 drones and some long-range missiles, well, Russia, under the logic of our times, should destroy those missiles even before it gets to Ukraine.
Yes. Actually, I would just make a slight disagreement. I think we're in a pre-World War I circumstance because World War I was very bloody, although there's going to be an electronic nature to this war that we didn't see there. I would say that to what you're saying, Eric Vaad, who is a former military policy advisor to former Chancellor Angela Merkel, said it best. Russia has the list of all of the German companies and other European companies that are involved in supplying these weapons, these drones. And it is simply a matter of the day when they decide they're going to have to start taking out these facilities. And he's aware, as maybe one of a handful of military voices in Europe, that that is a real possibility, that that's going to happen. So I think that the key thing for us is to bring those voices out in the West that are not insane, because there is a huge propaganda campaign both to keep people stupid in the dark in the West, but also to try to wear down the Russian population, who generally up to this point have been patriotically standing by the president in the defense of Russia, and also of all the former Soviet states, who have up to now, it's been almost 12, 15 years, not wanted to participate with NATO in particular. So I think that that's how we have to actually look at it, is focus on who are the voices of sanity. Because what you're saying with Great Britain is insane.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they do it. They think they're doing it at low costs. Okay, that's their level of cynicism. And as far as the reaction to these missile attacks, it's only angered people in Russia, and has actually made people feel, why are we conducting this conflict with one hand tied behind our back? That is the reaction. But Michael, you know, okay, so these missiles are coming in from NATO airspace. How is that helping Ukraine's battlefield prospects? Because I don't see that it does at all. And because it's not helping them on the battlefield, I equate these missile attacks as terrorism.
They are, and Ukraine basically lost the war a year ago. But it's the NATO countries through this proxy that want to continue this thing. And they're doing it, they're keeping Ukraine on life support. And now they're so frustrated that they're now extending it to their own territories. If they do launches from their territories, they're doing overflights right now. But under existing international law, that's going to open up those countries to attack. And under Article 5 of the NATO Charter, there's nothing NATO can really do about it. Because that will constitute an attack by another country on Russia at that point. And Russia has every right to respond. You're right that Putin has shown restraint. He doesn't, and he disabuses them of the notion that he wants to expand into Europe, which is their battle cry for continuing this nonsense. And the UK, for some reason, has this 300-year-old feud with Russia that they just can't get over with, and they've got to stop it because they're only the size of the state of Indiana, and they no longer have an empire nor a fleet like they used to, and they've just got to come to grips with reality.
Yeah, Michael, one thing they still have, and it's MI6, and they know how to create a lot of trouble around the world. Remember Spiderweb? Okay, they were very much involved.
Well, they're joined at the hip with CIA and with Mossad, so that's a winning combination for them. And the CIA knows about it. They're behind the scenes helping to extend this, undercutting Donald Trump's desire to try to bring a conclusion to this war, and the Europeans just are not listening.
All right, well, I want to
extend the war to 2030.
I want to talk about the Trump administration's angle on this in the second part of the program. Dan, we had, I think it was in Latvia, where a Ukrainian drone crashed. Interestingly enough, I think there were a number of cases, one into an oil refinery, which was kind of, I would say that can't be serendipity. But, I mean, given the logic of NATO's planning here, so Latvia is hit by a missile by a country not in NATO, so why didn't they invoke Article 5 against Ukraine?
Well, we know why, because NATO is firmly allied with Ukraine. While Ukraine is not officially in NATO, and of course NATO membership of Ukraine the question about that is what in part led to this conflict to begin with. They're treated as if they're in NATO, right? And so they're going to look the other way when there's an errant bomb or whatever from Ukraine that hits a NATO country because they support Ukraine, you know, full stop. Remember, there was, in fact, earlier in the war, a bomb or a missile that hit Poland. And they initially blamed Russia, but it was Ukraine. That apparently it came from Ukraine. And again, they just looked the other way. And I think that's what we're going to expect from here
on out. I think it's
out.
Also the case, though, gentlemen, that no, in fact, NATO doesn't really have any capability whatsoever from any substantial military standpoint to stand up to Russia. I would say that it shows a fear and an actual weakness on the standpoint of NATO. They don't want to actually engage. They don't have the ability. The United States certainly has zero capability to fight a war on an Eastern Front battlefield. So I think that the main thing on this is to simply shape a psychological warfare on people. And part of that is to try and force out a view inside Russia that Russia has to be prepared for trying to win a nuclear war. And if people can start talking about that, to what you were saying a moment ago, Peter, President Trump is weak. He's not fighting all out.
I want to continue that thought on the second part of the program. I'm going to jump in here, gentlemen. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the Ukraine proxy war. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the Ukraine proxy war. Okay, I want to finish up with Ryan with a point that we were discussing before we went to the break. Ryan, I've noted, I think all of us have noticed here this kind of heightened campaign that Ukraine is about to turn the corner. The country that I live in, Russia, is about to disintegrate. Putin is nowhere to be found. I even heard that there are no public toilets in Moscow, which kind of I found astounding. Okay, I mean, this is, you know, I think this is in lieu of a real strategy. There is no military strategy here. It's a psychological strategy. But the problem with it, it only works on people that are converted to, Ukraine is winning. So I really don't get it. I find it really pathetic. Maybe Twitter is playing this game with me, their algorithm against me, because that's all I get that garbage all of the time. But it's very concerted. It's not very sophisticated. And it shows desperation to me. Ryan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's desperation. I mean, look, we have to look at the. So, of course, President Putin is put in the camp of if he's alive.
Yeah.
If he's alive, that he's being too pragmatic. I want to say that there is an attack on the Russian population to just, you know, let out, as the Germans would say, the entire pig dog, the Schweinhund, and just go for and destroy and level all of Ukraine. But it is the case, Ukraine, you know, is really only maybe one third, as far as those Nazis, of that territory. A lot of that territory is Russian. So, but in my talking with people, it doesn't take much for an American, such as Candace Owens visiting Russia, to show that, in fact, all of this about Russia is not true. I was there May 9th. I was very happy to be there for the 80th anniversary celebration of Victory Day. One American going over there and then just telling everybody transforms everything. And the fact is that what Russia's doing also with China, which is about 50 to 100 years in advance of the United States from an economic, actual industrial, scientific, and technological capability, this is actually the basis for the future of Russia's development. And so the question is really the West. Is the West going to exist? Because our own actions are causing our economies to implode. So that propaganda is belied by the fact that people can't even afford basic things here.
Yeah, and considering the deadlock surrounding Iran, it could get far worse very, very
flailing,
fast.
Flailing. We're flailing in the United States.
Michael, you know, there are news reports that Trump is shuffling troops, American troops in Europe, moving them out of Germany, possibly to Poland. There's also public reporting that the American nuclear umbrella may be extended to Poland and the Baltic republics. This is going down the road of insanity because it's creating an even more unstable situation. I get it where the Trump administration doesn't want to spend money on conventional arms because they need to replenish their stocks. I mean, they've really depleted everything here. But extending the nuclear umbrella is an invitation to disaster. Michael.
Well, it definitely underscores the fact that NATO is not a defensive alliance. It's an offensive alliance. And that proves it time and time again when you're going to be talking about moving nuclear weapons around. As it is, that's a sign that they're on a hair trigger. And if you start employing these weapons in these other countries, they'll still probably remain hopefully under U.S. control. But we should be pulling out of NATO altogether, and NATO ought to be going away. The Cold War is supposed to be over, but you have these NATO countries now that are trying to accentuate this because they cannot get out of that paradigm of 80 years ago, post-World War II era. Time has moved on. And what I think this really is, along with the attacks on Iran, is the fact that you're seeing a demise of the unipolar world order and the rise of a multipolar world order. That's what is occurring here. And it's expressing itself through these individual crises that are occurring, but there's a larger picture here. And also a quest to try and keep the dollar relevant in a world where that's changing as well. The countries that are sick and tired of sanctions such as Russia, China, Iran, and the global South are sick and tired of sanctions of the West and weaponizing the dollar. That's what this is really all about. It isn't the individual countries or, Iran's got a nuclear weapon or Russia's about ready to march across and attack. Russia's been so restrained, it hasn't even taken out Kyiv yet. But I think it might. If the drone attacks are continue.
I like to be very careful with my words, gentlemen. But if they're going to be using these British long-term missiles against the civilian population of Russia, Kyiv may be a distant memory one day. Okay, I hate saying that. Okay, but this is a path that they have chosen. And like I said at the very beginning of the program, Russia is a nuclear power. It will not allow its deterrence to be irrelevant. The West is going to learn the hard way what that deterrence means. They have nuclear weapons for a reason, to deter attack and to preserve their security. Dan, you know, this whole talk about the Europeans having an envoy to Russia, which I found to be just quite comical, a whole lot of theater. They can't seem to focus in on anyone. Kaya Kallas, I think, by definition, but because of limited IQ, is disqualified. Though she does know a lot about Russians. She's a Russian speaker herself. Her family was part of Soviet royalty. I mean, she lived a wonderful, privileged life in the Soviet Union as a young woman. But she, I guess because of that, she knows all the traps that the Russians can set. But even if they got an envoy together, what would they possibly say?
Well, I really don't know. I mean, again, given that NATO is at war with Russia in a very real way, mm-hmm. both economically and militarily, I don't know what they can say, what conciliatory words that an envoy would have. What is to be negotiated here? And let's remember that there was apparently a negotiated settlement that was possible back in March or April of 2022 when the U.S. and the U.K. scuttled that, right? This war could have ended a long time ago. And it seems to me neither the U.S. nor NATO want the war to end. So I don't know what an envoy is going to do in Russia, certainly not make peace.
Well, how about sending Gerhard Schroeder as the envoy to Russia?
I will give my own personal opinion on that. I think that was kind of a troll, tongue in cheek. Okay, and if you look at when President Putin said it, he had kind of a smile on his face. Who knows? I don't think one is necessary because there's nothing that the EU wants to negotiate, which actually, Ryan, brings me to my next question here. There is an interesting parallel of the United States dealing with Iran. During times of negotiation, Iran has been attacked twice, okay, during times of negotiations. And then we had the Istanbul process, which was scuttled by Boris Johnson and the United States. Victoria Nuland has even said that publicly. And there, you know, there's a phrase in Russian, agreement incapable. It shows that the West in general, when it is confronted with a formidable adversary, they fold. They have nothing to say. They don't know what diplomacy is because they're usually demanding unconditional surrender. They're not getting that from Russia, and they're not getting that from Iran, and they simply just don't know what to do. Ryan.
Yes. And I would just add that when Foreign Minister Lavrov made his phone call to Secretary Rubio to clear diplomats out of Kiev, I think, in fact, that is the best thing from a diplomatic standpoint that you're going to get. And I don't know that we actually left. I presume we our people left Kiev, but the continuing taking out of these command centers is going to be the best message. I would just want to add one more thing from that standpoint. Gold has overtaken U.S. Treasuries as the top global reserve asset of countries. So in terms of the collapsing dollar, the United States does speak dollars and cents. The war material that we finance that goes to Ukraine and the intelligence, it's dollars and cents. So this is actually where I think the victory comes from, is the economic victory. Russia will win on the battlefield. They've already, as Michael has said, they've already essentially won the battle. So now what we're talking about is to get it across to people that Russia has in fact won, and it's time to actually talk in good faith. Because right now, it's exactly as you said, there's nothing to talk about.
Well, you know, Michael, that is the problem, and, you know, and it's something that, you know, you've been on the program many, many times, and I think we're both of the same mind, is that, you know, all of this talk of an envoy and meeting in Budapest and, you know, Anchorage and all, you know, it's really all going to come to nothing because the West just expects unconditional surrender, and the countries like Russia and Iran simply aren't going to do it. We're not going to get a diplomatic solution. We will get some outcome, and that outcome will be dictated by what happens on the battlefield. But there's not going to be, you know, a signing on the USS Missouri or, the capitulation in Berlin. It's not going to happen that way. It's going to, it'll just become a political fact. And if we had more time, I would talk about this war. When it's over, it won't be over. 30 seconds. Go ahead, Michael.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And look, the Europeans have already stated they want this conflict in Ukraine to go on at least to 2030 to give the European countries a chance to switch to a war production capability so that they can go after Russia. There's no end in sight. And I think that's why the United States has basically lost interest. There's no way of getting these Europeans to quit being suicidal. And from now and after bailing their asses out for the last two world wars, I think the United States is fed up with it. They just cannot help themselves.
Well, on a parting note, gentlemen, as long as von der Leyen and Kaya Kallas are in charge, I think that's probably a very important Russian soft power asset. Okay, on that note, gentlemen, I want to thank my guests in Pittsburgh, Austin, and in Reston. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.